I think you have to be honest about how the myths around the Alamo were used to oppress Chicanos and Tejanos and Mexican Americans and make them feel like lesser citizens.
That's Chris Tomlinson, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Chris Tomlinson is a columnist for the Houston Chronicle and the San Antonio Express News, and the author of the New York Times bestselling Tomlinson Hill, which was about his family's slave-owning history in Texas. From 1995 to 2007, he reported from more than 30 countries and 9 wars for the Associated Press. He joins us to talk about Forget the Alamo, the Rise and Fall of an American Myth. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Well, the story we've been told about the Battle of the Alamo is that it was about Texas independence, but you point out that that's not really the full story. Tell us more about what Texas was really fighting to preserve.
Well, you know, when you look deep into the story, you realize that there was really one fundamental difference between what the Mexican government wanted for Texas and what the Anglos wanted, and that was slavery. The Anglos had come to Texas to farm cotton. It's a great area to farm cotton down around Houston. But a new government in Mexico, one that was multi-ethnic, one that had post-colonial, it had overthrown the Spanish rule, and established an egalitarian constitution. They were opposed to slavery, and they were trying to eliminate it in Texas. And that political conflict, after a few years, became the Texas Revolt.
And the story that's been told and retold is that it's really about independence. And there are these brave heroes who died there. But you point out that the heroes of the Alamo, in fact, many of them had rather checkered histories that people don't talk about.
Oh, Davy Crockett was a failed politician who had invented a numerous numbers of myths about his background and his fighting prowess. You have Jim Bowie, who was a land swindler in Louisiana and in Arkansas. He was under federal investigation. He was also a slave smuggler, illegally taking slaves from Cuba and bringing them into the United States through Texas. And then you have William Barrett Travis, who'd murdered a man and abandoned his wife and child in Alabama to start again in Texas, who was a rabble-rouser and a self-proclaimed racist who hated Mexicans. So it was, these are the people that under Texas law, school teachers have to say are heroes.
I want to back up just a moment for those who may not be familiar with the Alamo itself. This was a Spanish Catholic mission initially. So how did it end up being the site of this battle?
There are now 5 Spanish missions, historic missions in San Antonio. And San Antonio de Valero, what we now call the Alamo, was one of the earliest. It's been there for over 300 years. When the Spanish built it, the roof collapsed. And so, you know, the chapel, the church, the famous facade that we see was actually created by the U.S. Army during the Mexican-American War. So they moved on. And you had this compound where you could keep horses and a convent building called the Long Barrack. And it just became a convenient place to put troops, whether you were the Spanish colonial army, the Mexican army, or the Texas army.
Tell us about the Tejanos and their role in the state of Texas and the events surrounding the Alamo, and why, due to racism and other factors, that their contributions have not been fully recognized.
So the Tejanos were the Mexican Spanish residents who were in Texas before the first Anglos came. And they were interested in developing their province, Tejas. So they invited the Anglos to come in and settle and create farms. But they were also very independent minded. And so they believed in the federal constitution of Mexico that gave Texas a certain level of autonomy, such as allowing limited slavery. When Santa Anna came to power, he wanted to establish a central dictatorship. And so the Tejanos rebelled against that. In fact, the Tejanos were ready to pick up rifles long before the Anglos were, but they were fighting against a dictator in Mexico City for Mexico. They never intended to make Texas independent, let alone make Texas part of the United States. The Anglos kind of co-opted this revolt against Santa Anna. And during the Battle of the Alamo, when Tejanos were fighting alongside whites, that's when the Anglos declared independence. And so many of them had no idea that they were fighting against a nation that they loved.
I'm talking with Chris Tomlinson. He's the co-author of Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. And one of the things you talk about in the book is the role of women in creating this myth. Tell us more about that.
So after the Civil War, you had a lot of widows and a lot of mothers who lost their sons in the Civil War. And all of these commemoration societies and heritage societies came up. You had the United Daughters of the Confederacy. You had the Daughters of the American Revolution. And in Texas, we had the Daughters of the Republic of Texas. And when women couldn't vote and when women were not allowed to participate in politics, these societies became a very important and potent way for them to influence society and politics. And so the Daughters of the Republic of Texas took on the mission of preserving Texas memory and Texas myth, and they began to propagate it. You know, the line in the sand that Travis supposedly drew for people to cross to show their loyalty, that was invented out of whole cloth 38 years after the battle. There's no evidence at all that that existed. But the Daughters of the Republic of Texas pushed that myth so far that they actually put a strip of bronze in front of the Alamo that's supposed to be where Travis drew that line.
Like many people, I've visited the Alamo, and to be honest, even though it might be heresy to say so, I wasn't that impressed. For something that looms as large in the history of the state as the Alamo does, I guess I expected there to be more of a sort of museum quality to it and more to the site itself. I subsequently learned that part of the reason that it had never been developed in that way is because the Daughters of the Republic of Texas have maintained control of that site for so very long, up until just very recently. And also, the other part of this is that if you look around the Alamo, for those who have visited it, you know, it's surrounded by very touristy things like Ripley's Believe It or Not and souvenir stores and things that just somehow don't seem quite appropriate for this iconic piece of Texas history where so many people lost their lives. Tell us a bit more about the role that the Daughters of the Republic of Texas have played over the years, resulting in the Alamo that we see today.
You know, the Daughters are just this fascinating story, and you're right. They convinced the state of Texas to put the Alamo compound in their hands for them to maintain and operate for almost 100 years. And it was only when they were unable to raise the money to take care of the structure that the General Land Office stepped in and took control again. But the politics of what building to preserve, what building to tear down, how to tell the story, who should be honored, that's a fascinating story in itself and something I really enjoyed writing about. The Daughters were notorious for having a gift shop that was almost as big as the Alamo Church itself. And they also operated on the idea that this was a shrine, that this was a memorial. So whenever you walked in the door, they hushed you. You had to keep, you know, you weren't supposed to speak. You were supposed to be quiet reverence. There's very little display cases, very little to see. Every person I've taken to the Alamo is disappointed. They're like, really, this is all there is? A study of tourists found that on average, the tourists would spend less than 15 minutes at the Alamo, whereas they would spend 45 minutes at the Ripley's, believe it or not, across the street, where they could have a hot dog and stand next to a wax Donald Trump.
There are plans for a new Alamo Plaza to put this in a kind of a different perspective and sort of clear out some of the areas we just described. But there are those who oppose that as well. Tell us more about it.
So Texans love to talk about their history, but they don't want to spend any money to preserve it. And so for years, people have tried to come up with a way to create a better experience, to create a what they call a world-class facility at the Alamo, something more along the lines of Gettysburg. And that has never taken off until rock musician Phil Collins comes along, and he has this huge collection of artifacts, the largest collection of Alamo artifacts in the world, and he donates it to the state of Texas on the condition that Texas build a $300 million museum to display his collection. And so that's the controversy now, is A, are all those artifacts really what he thinks they are? Because some experts think that the authentication has not been done very well. Second, do we really want to spend $300 million in one of America's poorest large cities on a monument to white supremacy in 13-day battle in 1836? And there are also people who want to tell the whole story of the Alamo, all 300 years. Talk about the 1,500 Native Americans buried in the street in front of the Alamo. Talk about the lunch counter that is at the Woolworths building, which is on the original footprint of the Alamo, where African Americans stood up for their rights and desegregated the lunch counter. So there's a big fight. It's not over, and I suspect it's only going to get bigger.
Well, there's all that mythology that people want to cling to. And as you point out in the book, they don't really want the true story to be told because they feel like it'll diminish the Alamo. Hollywood and Disney, you point out, has contributed to this Alamo mythology. Tell us a bit more about their role in this.
Well, you know, you look at history books before 1940, and Davy Crockett is maybe a footnote. He's considered fairly insignificant. But Walt Disney was trying to come up with ways to do live-action films. And so he told his writers to go find Americans who would represent his conservative ideas about what it means to be a self-sustaining American man. And they create this myth, the myth of Davy Crockett, the Fess Parker. They take all the fun out of Crockett. He was funny. He made jokes. He made fun of himself. And we end up with Fess Parker with his stoic mid-century American male trying to fight the foreign hordes for freedom. It's such a Cold War story, and it has nothing to do with the truth. And yet, lots of people think that was the real Davy Crockett.
So we have this mythology surrounding the Alamo, and then we have the inconvenient truth, let's say. What do you think about where the Alamo should rest in history? What do you think the true legacy of the Alamo should be?
Well, I think we have to be honest about the 300 years of colonial history around that building. You know, it was the Spanish Catholic missionaries who were not saints built that structure. Then you have the Anglos coming in the 1820s and 1830s, who are their own form of colonialism, stealing part of a country from its indigenous people. I think you have to be honest about how the myths around the Alamo were used to oppress Chicanos and Tejanos and Mexican Americans and make them feel like lesser citizens. We have to tell that entire story, particularly in a place where Anglos are only 40% of the population and Hispanics will soon be the majority.
The book is Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. The book was co-authored by Brian Burrow, Jason Stanford, and Chris Tomlinson. Chris, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me on, Dan.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.